Thanks for joining us. This is the Economics of Elections, a sub-segment of Notepad. It's only one or two more days to the polls, and of course, many Malaysians are eagerly awaiting their moment to cast their votes in this very momentous watershed event. We're looking at about 5 to 6 million young voters voting for the first time ever since we moved down the age of eligibility from 21 to 18. We're also looking at very tightly contested rural seats in Peninsular Malaysia, where perhaps 3, if not 4 coalitions are vying for that rural Malay votes. We're looking at some surprises that might be sprung in Sabah. The only surety that we can talk about right now is GPS right now in Sarawak. So there's a lot of permutations in terms of what the outcome is going to be. And because of this, one of the bigger polling institutions in the world, YouGov, has ran a polling study between 8th to 14th of November. In it, they have concluded that Pakatan Harapan is set to capture the largest share of votes. But of course, this doesn't necessarily translate to the seats being won. So here to unpack all of this is Dr. Campbell White, the Asia Pacific Head of Public Affairs and Polling at YouGov, talking to us directly from Sydney, Australia. Campbell, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. Let's get through the top line findings from this recent poll before we deep dive into some other questions later on, Campbell.
Sure. Let's go ahead. Do you want me to talk about them, or are you going
yes,
to?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the election is looking to be very close. It's pretty clear that Pakatan Harapan is going to get the largest share of the vote. But their vote is quite concentrated in urban electorates. So they'll do very well in a lot of those electorates. The vote in the rural electorates looks to be a bit stronger for Barisan Nasional and for, I'm going to mispronounce it.
Go ahead, try your luck.
Muhyiddin's,
Muhyiddin Yassin, yes.
Perikatan, is that right?
That's right.
Okay, good. yes, so I think that is the vote. They are going to share a lot of the votes in the rural sort of Bumiputra areas in the Peninsular Malaysia in particular. So it's actually very difficult to see how this is going to pan out in terms of actual seats, because of course to win a seat in a rural constituency requires a lot fewer votes than it does to win it in Selangor or in Kuala Lumpur.
Okay, and because of this, the sentiment that is being done from the polling do suggest that the coalition of Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's party, Perikatan Nasional, are set to pick up 20% of the vote. It's very tricky for us to talk about the 20% of the vote being the share of vote being cast. However, as we've seen in the recent state elections of Johor, for instance, where even though they got, let's say, 20 to 30% of the share of vote, that doesn't really translate to them winning the seat per se because of the first-past-the-post system that we apply. And because of this, do you feel that the sentiment is going to be very, very difficult to read, at least on the ground in the urban, in the rural areas of Peninsular Malaysia?
I think it's probably a fair assumption that Perikatan Nasional and Barisan Nasional are drawing from the same pool, from a similar pool of voters. So, you know, if they're both running in an electorate, then the danger for both of them is that Pakatan Harapan actually comes through and wins a seat on something like 30% of the vote, because the vote is split between those two other coalitions. Mm-hmm. And that's the risk under first past the post of having a situation like this.
There's also that whole party, which is Barisan Nasional. It doesn't seem to be favoured amongst the respondents that YouGov has been polling. How would you read this finding?
I think one of the factors is they're basically not running in Sarawak, you know, because they've basically stood aside for
GPS.
GPS. So it's a little bit, if you consider that GPS is probably going to work with Barisan Nasional, then, you know, there's probably their percentage of the vote previously would have been a bit higher because we would have included them in Barisan Nasional, but of course officially they're not in a coalition.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't rule out though that we end up with a situation where they could form government because they were able to form a coalition. But looking at these numbers, it would seem that only Pakatan Harapan has got a chance of winning in their own right by themselves.
Okay, Campbell, we need to talk about, on top of the party voting intention question that was asked, I want to ask you about the view of political figures among Malaysian voters. In it, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin seems to be doing rather well, actually. 33% is positive, with 33% neutral and only 29% negative. Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, 29% positive, 34% neutral and 29% negative. So, and of course, incumbent caretaker Prime Minister Ismail Sabri, 22% positive and 41% neutral with 30% negative. So, you know, you look at these three personalities, Muhyiddin is taking the lead when it comes to the polling segment. When I read this, I find it rather interesting because, you know, anecdotally at least, or pedestrian-wise, Muhyiddin doesn't fare well amongst the urban electorate. So where do you see the kind of science behind this finding?
Firstly, that gap between Muhyiddin and Anwar is quite narrow. There's not much difference there. They're the two clear favourites, as you sort of pointed out, and this is an interesting thing about polling as opposed to things we pick up anecdotally, is that, you know, we tend to speak anecdotally to the people that we are close to or that we know well, right? So if you live in KL or Selangor or something like that, which most urban, you know, you will tend to know people who think that way. But in East Malaysia, in the eastern part of Peninsular Malaysia, in Kelantan and Terengganu, for example, you know, Muhyiddin is doing well in those areas. So, you know, across the board, they're the two sort of standouts. I mean, the remarkable thing for me is the incumbent prime minister's numbers are not very good. You know, those are, you know, if you compare back to the previous times when, you know, previous prime ministers in Malaysia and you'd ask similar questions, usually the incumbent prime minister was pretty popular. So compared to that, it's quite different. And the other interesting thing is how, you know, if we'd asked this question in the last election or previously about Dr. Mahathir, you know, his numbers are just, you know, way down from where they would have been previously.
Okay. Moving along to some of the important issues among Malaysian voters, this is actually quite interesting because it is very much consistent with the rest of the world. Rising costs of goods and services, income and salaries. However, Malaysia has one more item that needs to be discussed, which is government integrity, which is rather important for those above 50. And also as important, I suppose, for the rest of the age groups. This is the sticking point, I suppose, because at the campaign rallies or the ceramah of all these politicians making their stump speeches, many of them try to address this. None of them are giving concrete plans, step-by-step clarity. But everybody says that it's important. Everybody says that they will do something about it, but nobody is giving the plans for it. I don't know whether it is, you know, trying to pander towards the gallery. However, do you feel that for the candidates that provide clearer plans, that would be better for them to appeal towards these voters?
I think the election ultimately is going to be decided on what perceptions are about cost of living and what's done there. Because if you add the factors together of you know, in our poll, rising costs of goods and services and income and salaries, which is sort of the opposite. You know, they're two sides of the same coin, really, which is cost of living. Mm. And if you consider that, you know, those, that's the key driver for this election. There's a quite interesting demographic differences in terms of age, because it's the younger people are much more likely to mention income and salaries. So the people who are aged under 18 to 34, which is, you know, obviously there's a big chunk of Malaysian voters, because Malaysians' population compared to Australia, for example, is quite high. So there are a lot of people in that. Cost of living, on the other hand, you know, is really the dominant issue for people who are aged over 50, you know, because some of them are not working, some of them are retired, for instance. And, you know, the integrity issue you mentioned before, it's something that actually is a global, it's not unique to Malaysia, these concerns. They might be expressed differently, but I think, you know, even in our recent Australian election, we had the same, it was an issue as well. The integrity of politicians, do they keep their promises? You know, are they dealing with the appearance of fairness? It's not unique to Malaysia, it's also in other countries too.
One thing I find interesting, and the reason why I wanted to tweet this poll altogether, is because of this single point, to be frank, Dr. White, which is protecting Bumiputra rights. Here I sit in KL, and I thought that this wouldn't be an issue for those, you know, aged between 18 to 34. This would be a primary issue for, you know, senior citizens. However, the polling suggests completely otherwise, with only 13% above 50 that is actually taking the issue of protecting Putra rights as a concerning issue. But 27% or 23% for 18 to 34 and 35 to 49 respectively do view this as very, very critical. How do you read this finding?
I think it's actually worth pointing out, actually, that there's sort of an assumption that this is a conservative view, therefore it applies to older people. But actually, if you look at younger people, you know, they talk about income and salaries, they talk about educational opportunities. A lot of those the have been assisted by policies which affirmative action to help Bumiputra get into higher education, to get jobs in certain sectors. And it doesn't surprise me that younger voters would think that that's important, because if they're looking for those opportunities, you know, they may some of them may feel that they're going to benefit from that affirmative action if it remains in place.
Okay.
It's not a majority of people that consider that, in the younger age group, that consider that an issue. But the fact that some people do is not surprising, because I think it ties in with that economic issues that we talked before.
Which is cost of living and wages.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. We'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more with YouGov and their recent poll on the Malaysian politics scene. Thanks for continuing on with us. I have with me Dr. Campbell White, APAC Head of Public Affairs and Polling at YouGov, joining us from Sydney, Australia. Campbell, let's talk a little bit more about the polling findings, particularly when it comes to sources of news on how voters access the political news right now. Facebook and TV, thank God for that, at least I have a job, I suppose, Campbell. Facebook and TV is rather high, along with talking to friends and family. I don't know whether Facebook TV and talking to friends can give you the kind of accurate news source. Again, we're down to anecdotals. It seems like word of mouth is going to be a big deal when it comes to, you know, distributing political news. But It is what it is, isn't it, Dr. Campbell?
It's something that globally is becoming increasingly important. You know, in a lot of countries, Facebook advertising is being used extensively by political parties because it's the easiest way to reach people. Facebook is you know, and it largely...
Sorry, am I assuming Facebook being Meta, therefore Instagram as well, or is it just specifically Facebook as the platform?
Well, Facebook is the main platform, to be honest, because, you know, many people have a Facebook account now. So kind of compared to the other platforms, it is much bigger in terms of its coverage. And I think it also reflects Facebook is smart, and when you, not implying that traditional media are not, but when Facebook knows the kind of person that's and they're going to show them content which agrees with their point of view. Whereas if you watch something on TV or if you watch something on a more mainstream, you're going to be seeing things which are you may not agree with. It might make you angry, and therefore you don't necessarily want to watch. Whereas Facebook is going to feed you stuff which actually fits with your worldview.
So it affirms our own worldview. It affirms our own assumption. But basically, wouldn't that be, you know, what we've heard so far in the world of tech is enragement equals engagement. So how does that philosophy tie in with the kind of notion that you're mentioning, where, you know, Facebook affirms our assumptions?
The psychology of media is that people prefer to engage with things that affirm their point of view, and therefore. We see this on social media. You know, people engage with and like things that they like, obviously.
Yeah.
They do that, they're going to get more of that sort of thing. So that's how that sort of works. And yes, you're correct that I think, you know, that they're not going to get the alternative points of view necessarily that they're going to get from a more balanced source of information that's not tailored to them, like your program, for example.
Okay. Campbell, we don't have much time left. Maybe you can share with us the methodology that was used in this polling and whether or not this is consistent with how YouGov polls globally.
So we polled 2,687 Malaysian citizens for this poll. We had quotas in place to make sure that the sample was fully representative in terms of every electorate across Malaysia. We tailored the questions so that we did this after the nominations had closed. So we were actually able to tailor the questions so they only had the options that are presented to them on the ballot paper. In terms of weighting the sample, we've weighted by age, gender, ethnicity, and education as well, because that's a key driver in voting intention, whether somebody has a tertiary education or not. Globally, that's becoming very important in terms of polling. We obviously do, we do news poll for the Australian in Australia. We also did a poll for the Singapore election, which unfortunately we couldn't release until after the election because Singapore doesn't permit polling to be released before Election Day. But in Malaysia, we don't have that issue. So. Look, we're looking for.
Whoa, hang on. I'm not going to let this slide by. What's with this whole restriction on not being able to publish before elections?
Singapore has a law that you can't publish polling publicly.
Of course they would, wouldn't they? Okay.
I'm not making further comment on that, but that is the law. So basically, we have to abide by the law. I think Malaysia, is a very contested, contest that you're having, and polling contributes to that view, because without polling, basically you've just got people's points of view, and everybody's got a point of view, and it's different. Yeah.
There's an Australian saying as well that goes without saying on that phrase, but yeah, I guess it's an impolite to say it.
I think we'll get censored if we say that, right? I mean, that's
how do you affirm these kind of views when results do come out? Do you check back into your methodology and see where you got right and where you got, or you know, you need to improve on some of the assumptions?
Definitely. So we have been polling over a long period of time. This is the first one that we have released as YouGov so close to an election in Malaysia. But the reason that we're doing that is we're very confident that we're able to represent the population and represent what's going to happen on election day. I will say as a caveat, though, there is still 20% of people who said they are undecided or they prefer not to say at the in our poll. So it's a lot of this is sort of up for grabs as well. But, you know, I think it's a pretty good indication of the way things are likely to land on Saturday.
This segment of don't know or prefer not to say, 20%, is this bigger than usual when it comes to political polling that YouGov has done in other markets?
It's smaller than previous Malaysian polls, but it's higher than we've seen in Western countries, for example. In Western countries, people are very used to polling. You know, they will. I think the ideologies of the political parties are very clear, and you know, you have a Labour Party and a Conservative Party, for example. So, you know, a large proportion of the population tends to be fixed, and it's only around the margins that things change.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, in Malaysia, these coalitions are newer. And they're very different, for example, to what was at the election last in 2018.
Yeah. Would YouGov, I don't know whether you're in a position to say this, but would YouGov continue to make political polling in Malaysia moving forward?
Oh, I certainly hope so. That's definitely our intention. And more regularly, hopefully, especially if we have media partners that are interested in covering it. So.
Well, you got me as a friend, definitely. I will definitely cover this. Polling is something that is lacking in Malaysia, particularly notable brands doing it. And of course, you know, polling does address... I got one guest here, Campbell, on my show. He was talking about how polling addresses the rational, but election addresses the emotional. So that's why you get discrepancies when it comes to polling and... what people do in the polling booth itself on the day. I don't know. Do you agree with that kind of statement?
To some degree, although I think Malaysians are quite open now about the issues politically. You know, it is a democratic country and people are quite happy to express their point of view. So I would think that, you know, I'm not expecting any problems from that point of view. I think if people, especially the medium that we're doing this poll, we're not doing it face-to-face. If we're doing it face-to-face, maybe, you know, people might be embarrassed to say they vote a certain way or something like that. But the medium that we're doing this polling, which is online, it's completely anonymous. So there's really no reason why people can't share those points of view.
Fantastic. That was Dr. Campbell White, APAC Head of Public Affairs and Polling at YouGov, dialing in from Sydney, Australia. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That concludes this particular series of Economics of Elections. We're going to be covering all the news of the elections on Astro Awani, so do stay tuned with us. Astro Awani is your 15th general election channel. Also, I'll be covering some of the news on polling day itself on the morning as well as in the evening on the day of the polling day, 19th of November. So do stay tuned for that as well. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.